Hello and thanks for joining us here on the New Life Show, a series of educational talks with Rav, Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Rav Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Eshedarel. Hello. Today we'd like to talk to Rav Lightman about the phenomena of extreme admiration, which sometimes becomes idealization of another person. We previously said that a need to admire someone else is something natural. A child admires his mom, the chicklings admire their mom, and this is how nature aims us always at something higher. And when appreciation goes and grows and becomes admiration, suddenly we find ourselves admiring someone or kids admiring some celeb, and sometimes admiration goes and grows and it becomes idealization. And this is what we'd like to understand today. How can we control all those urges that exist in us, probably from nature, but in a rational, calculated fashion? Yael, please. So idealization is becoming ever more extreme in our times compared to the past. Idealization is really treating another person as a god that I'm ready to do everything for him, including sacrificing my life. And if, God forbid, something happens to him, we can hear about phenomena like four-year-old that if some rock star says that he loves someone else, they break into tears, and really, it's inconceivable. And 13-year-olds that are ready to commit suicide once, God forbid, something happens to their favorite rock star. And we're talking about soccer teams where fans are willing to kill each other, and we did see these things happen in the past, people killing each other in favor of idealization of a certain person. And this is becoming more and more extreme. And this is the question: where is the borderline between normal admiration and a place where it really becomes some kind of a madness that causes suffering both to the person and also to society? First of all, we have to understand, how do we relate to each other? If I do not appreciate a person at all, I don't see him. He could be next to me, and I don't feel that he's there. What do you mean? That's what I mean? Because I feel people, suppose still vegetative, animate, and people that are around me, I feel them to the extent of how important they are for me. To the extent to which they're non-important to me, I don't feel them. Either they're important from the positive perspective or negative. Either they can threaten me with something or they can be the source of my pleasures. Only this way, because our nature is the will to enjoy. And therefore, things that I won't be able to enjoy, I don't see. Why don't I see the next world? What do you mean? Why? Very simple. Because I have no interest in it, because the next world is complete bestowal, utter love, that I have to love the other more than I love myself, that I have to give everything to the other, to everyone, and not to myself, which is disconnected from my ego, from my will to receive, and therefore I don't feel it. The upper world, it's here, but I don't feel it. Just to understand, what upper world are you talking about? The spiritual world, the upper world, the real world, including the upper force, the creator, I don't feel it. Because all these are in qualities that are completely non-important for me, because these are all qualities of love and bestow. So what's not important for me, I don't feel? No. And what is important, I do feel? Yes. It's all according to the extent of importance. So, now, we, throughout our evolution, our development, we're all the time developing according to our ego that goes and grows all the time. But the growing ego, it grows. Only the problem is that when it grows, it doesn't educate itself to also be useful towards something, but it only grows in size more and more. It wants more and more. And then we, because the ego grows, we even leave religions, beliefs, different things, we actually become more and more primitive and cumbersome. Why? Because even though that our ego grows and we could develop it to different good achievements, we're not engaged in that, and we lose the connection we maybe had in the past of impressions, inspirations, excitements, like we had supposed with religions, beliefs, and so on. Actually, in our current development, and especially we're talking about the 20th century, 21st century, the things that are going on, we're actually becoming more and more primitive than we were, than our forefathers were. So you're saying that the ego can grow in a good and in a bad direction, and we're actually growing it right now in the bad direction? No. We can. The ego does grow all the time, but we're not taking care of it. And therefore, turns out that each and every generation becomes more limited, more primitive. In what way? In terms of yearnings, aspirations, they're more closed, more cumbersome, more narrow, and they have a more narrow observation on things, more narrow perspective. Now, about what you asked regarding idealization, I'd say that people who have a big will to receive, a strong will to receive, and they're not aimed in a special direction towards something exalted, special, like culture, opera, symphonies, special literature. It's like we see with bestsellers. What's a bestseller? It should be the cheapest thing, and this is why it's sold to millions and not to individuals. Something good can't be a bestseller. A bestseller, what does it strum on? On your belly and down. This is the area it touches. Therefore, we have to understand that if we're talking about idealization to the point of worshiping, then we're talking about vast masses of people that aren't that developed, on the one hand. And on the other hand, the society they're in influences them very, very much and puts them into these states. Suppose, like in school where our kids are, then whether we like it or not, the kids there, they're cooking there together. And therefore, usually what the class thinks and appreciates, then of course, each one of them, he wants to show that he's also into it, a part of it as a child, because he doesn't want to run from it. He doesn't want to be left aside, outside the general framework of the friends and so on. And therefore, he actually has to show that he admires even more than they do someone or something and so on. Meaning it's something natural. It goes away as you grow. Afterwards, we grow up and we come to an age, usually it's after school or at the end of school, where we're starting to disperse, that we're not so closed in a classroom like in, suppose, elementary school. But afterwards, our horizons broaden, and we start seeing also what's happening in the world, and not everything is locked inside my class, and I don't have to yield my opinion towards the opinion of the society I'm in, and I have different other connections with people that I know and want to be with, and so on. But still, the masses, they are needy of admiring something, and we also see on the media that they're the ones that are specially promoting it, and also different offices, ministries, and other businesses, that that's their work, that all shape public opinion, and every time they feed the masses with different such values. Where is the borderline between a natural, normal, normative development and a place where it becomes not good, that it harms me, society? It depends, I'd say. Today we have to understand that nothing simply goes by or happens or appears simply so, but it's all under the control of governmental forces that invests a lot of strength and efforts into it, and they work on behalf of entire offices that work on shaping public opinion, and every government in every country makes sure and is concerned about what's going on in the masses and how can we direct them. And therefore we've reached a state that the media is so powerful, because through them you can really influence and direct everyone up to the point of, I don't know if it's up to the point of idealization, but we see that the masses are following it like sheep. What's the difference? It could be a teenager or an adult can be caught up in it, and it could reach the level of worshiping, and it could not happen to someone else. Everyone. No problem to confuse everyone with it, including the most individualist people. You simply have to put in more efforts and influence them through other people. Through other people, no problem. But there is no person that doesn't admire someone or something that you can't influence him, that you can't reach him and influence him through the people that he admires. So much that it confuses him, a person has no opinion of his own. No one has. It's all formed by the environment. We talked a lot about the influence of society over a person. It all comes from the environment. And it's not something individualistic. How could it be? Where will a person take it from? He's born as an animal, and he gets all the rest from the environment. Wherever the environment is stronger, that also meets his inner qualities, actually, but it actually depends on the environment. And if I want to influence someone, I have no problem. I only have to see what are his tastes, habits, what is he drawn to, what is he inclined to from birth, naturally, and so on. And then you can always choose a special environment that will pull him and work on him, and he'll be included there like everyone. Is there some kind of a control mechanism that a person can adapt in order to see whether he crossed the border or not? No. Only if he does it by an environment of his own, which is strong enough in order not to fall under the influence of another environment. Meaning that he has to change his environment. Any person, if you put him into a certain environment and you work on him, you can bring him to idealization. And we have no ability to control it. We do have the ability, but this is the ability. The ability to do it by another environment. But there is no other tool by which you can influence a person besides an environment, stronger or weaker environment. Okay, I'm on that path. That's it. That's it. Unless you come under the influence of a different environment, you're lost there. What can society do with these phenomena? How should it cope with it? Why society? I don't understand. There's phenomena here that hurts people, that can also hurt society itself, like with soccer fans. So in the powers of the government is the educational ministry and many, many other ministries, and they have to work on it to give each and every person a place where he can belong to something good instead of belonging to something bad. That's it. Meaning the media, they have to be the, let's call it, loudspeaker through which everyone hears according to his own tastes too. Can we do something? We, who are we? We, the people. I see that from above, nothing's arranged. Simple people, they can't do anything. How? I, with my kids, suppose, as a mom, can I do something? You can't do anything. It all depends on the society they're in. But the moment they go into a certain society, you won't be able to control them. Unless, as long as they're small, to forcefully take them from one place to another place where that specific society no longer exists, but only that. We have to understand that a person is influenced by the environment solely, and the environment could influence him up to idealization, up to worshipping different principles that are completely empty of any idea, but whatever society ascribes to them, this is what a person sees. And for him, it's not just an inflated balloon, but it's a balloon full of importance. Meaning that if we now take the balloon you just described and we aim it in a good direction, it could benefit society. If that mechanism of appreciation, admiration, up to idealization that exists naturally where in a person he appreciates and admires, he has the need to appreciate and admire, because by that he feels ascribed to someone greater, and he who is ascribed to the greater is great to the stronger, he's strong. If the environment he is in creates greater admiration towards something, he starts idolizing that thing. If he's a part of a soccer team that's really militant and violent, you're saying that he actually go into it. He wants to be a part of that environment and he'll do what they do. The question is, can we take that mechanism you just described? There are many forces, powerful energies there that we can eventually aim them towards good causes. Not only towards bad things, but also towards good things. Could this entire phenomena be something positive? Can you positively use it? I don't know such a thing. If suppose it's the soccer team, that instead of admiring some soccer player, instead of that, what, they'll admire something else. It won't be a fan club anymore. It's impossible. And to work against a large mass of people that's connected to some hero of theirs, it's impossible. And if the hero will be a good hero, he'll be a hero that aims towards good values, good things, volunteering, doing something that does good to other people and not beating up the fans from the other soccer team. That hero has to play on the natural desires of people. This is, for example, what Martin Luther King did. It was clear to him what to do, because he went for the liberation of the Afro-Americans and so on. So he operated against their natural desire, with their natural desire. But what, I'll come now up to a person and I'll start working on these people that you have to bestow onto others, you have to love others. How is that possible? But here there has to be a very special, subtle, gradual approach where we give the masses new values, but in a very subtle manner, and we build a new environment that influences a person. Without the influence of the environment, there can be no change in a person who's in a certain environment. Meaning, we're not coming from the individual point of view, person, which is in an environment that's hostile to his opinion. No, we have to build an environment and put people into it so they'll get a new idea from the environment. Okay, and if we already reach the extreme, so the moment I worship some rock star, some soccer group, automatically I hate someone else. Sure. I hate the competing rock star or the competing soccer team and so on. Is there a different option? Is it possible to both truly appreciate a certain group or a certain person and not to see the other as an enemy? That's only on condition that I'm not in too great of an idealization or worshiping where I could see his enemy as a means to raise my, let's call him, idol to an even higher level. I didn't understand the answer. In short, it's impossible. Why does it always have to be negative? Why can't you admire one person and not hate the other? Meaning to idolize someone and not hate the other. If you love this soccer team, you hate that soccer team. And that's how it is with everything. You love this singer, you have to hate her competition. Why do we always have to hate someone too? Why isn't it enough just to really love someone? You can't really love someone or something if you don't love the opposite. Because you have no measurement. The measurement is one against the other. This is how a person's built. I need some kind of a level, some kind of a measurement point. So as much as I love someone, it's against or compared to something else. To hate the other, it gives me what? Tastes, shades in my love to the first one. What does it do? It differentiates between the two. The light excels from the darkness, meaning that I can't simply love someone. Obviously, that there has to be a certain measurement here, some kind of a foundation based on which I appreciate things. If I have nothing to compare it with, then for me it's just, you know, hanging in the air. Either that it's between two soccer teams. That's clear then. It's clear to me that I love this and not that. There has to be black and white. Especially in such special emotions. So the more I hate my enemy, the more I love, the greater my love will be. It can't be one more than the other. It's to the same extent. Because otherwise, if I just love, then there's nothing about it. It's like hunger and satiation. It's like pain and being healthy. I have to have some kind of a measurement towards my senses, towards the fulfillment which I get from appreciating someone and so on. And fulfillment can only come in comparison. Okay, one more aspect. When we look at idealization in radical situations, we can see that people that idolize a certain person, they do crazy stuff that are completely irrational. I want to understand what motivates them. Because a person does things that he thinks that will do good things for him, and we look at that and we say, that's crazy. Young girls are ready to do, I don't know what, to be around some famous singer or something. What causes a person that's in a state of worshipping, celebrity worshipping, causes him to lose his rationale? Influence of the environment again. No, it projected. If you understood it, don't ask. No, I'm not asking what brought him to it. Look at a rock concert, for example, which you have in parks, suppose. The big celebs, where you have 10, 20,000, I don't know how many people come. tens of thousands of fans. Go there and stand in the middle, and you'll start idolizing too. You lose your head immediately, you'll look where everyone's looking, and you'll start talking like they talk, and immediately you change your program. Okay, this I understand. This is a mechanism that elevates a person on the ladder of appreciation, admiration, idealization, and so on through the influence of the environment. This I understand. Now let's take an individual under the influence of a certain environment. He worships another person. He's not a god, but he's willing to do things that we normal people look at him and say, he's insane, that's it. Not what brought him there, but what is his inner system of judgment? Influence of the environment. Did you understand what I asked? Of course. Unless there is an environment that will aim him this way, that he appreciates that person so much, up to idealization, he himself will not get there. Okay, he got there. Now explain what caused him to do a certain action. In the state of idealization, worshiping, it seems to us crazy. What is his inner system of judgment? It also causes a person suffering. He doesn't feel that it's suffering. He feels that it's, how to say, proximity, additional closeness, that specifically this way he can unite with his idol. And it's important for him, it's his entire life. Now for him, that's his life. His idol is before him, and that's it. And therefore, how do people kill themselves? Commit suicide. Yeah, they commit suicide the very same day that the person that they admired, that they saw as great their whole lives, dies. They feel that they can't be without him. They can't exist without him. And the sacrifice, they don't see it as a sacrifice, but they see it as the only opportunity to stay with him. But it's crazy. You're saying it's crazy. For them, it's not crazy. What is it for them? For them, it's the most rational action. Why? What do they get in return? Because they feel that they're connected with him beyond life and death. They as if lose themselves. It's not called to lose, it's called to receive. By this, a person gets additional vitality. The closeness between them, it also comes from the upper root of connection. There's eternity in it, and a person feels that when he's connected with his idol, let's call him, then he's ready to commit suicide, because by that he achieves the eternal connection between them. It's a level of connection we don't know. It's a level of connection that's beyond life and death, because it comes from an upper root. That actually it's in a different way, but we can reach a level of connection which is eternal. With whom? Between the upper force and us. And this is something that we all aspire for. On the inside, yes, we aspire for it, because by this we cross the border of life and death and are included in eternal connection. What exactly do we aspire for? We aspire to be connected to something very great, eternal, and complete. Inside us, it's as a foundation of our existence. And in the meantime, we discover this inclination through these values of idolizing stars and so on. In the meantime, you're saying that there are more advanced states. Sure. Can you give a direction in the time we have left? It's education. We have to educate a person for what is really worthwhile dedicating your life for, because besides this corporeal animalistic life with such random, let's say, values, that where does a person get them from? Instead of that, there's a different kind of existence which is truly eternal, whole, complete, where we belong to something truly great, the absolute. And this is what you have to educate a person towards. Rav Lightman, thank you very much. Our time's unfortunately up. Thank you very much, Yael. Thanks for being with us. Till next time, all the best.